Good evening, folks. This is Carolyn Evers. And as you know, this is my favorite time of the week. And I have brought along a favorite companion.
Good evening, Carolyn. Good evening, everyone. This is Richard.
Glad you're with us, Richard.
And I'm pleased you're well enough again, Carolyn, to be able to do this. Some of you will know that Carolyn has been suffering from not a small cold for a week or so, and she's on the mend, thank goodness.
Really? I'm mending. So, if any of you are familiar with our show, you know that we bring special people from the other side for you to receive information. And tonight, we have one of those beings that, in my opinion, was larger than life. I've come to know this gentleman very well since we've been communicating with one another, and it is General George Patton. So, Richard, I'm really looking forward to this.
Indeed. I am not exactly sure what to expect from this man. So, let me connect with his energy to begin with. And I experience him very powerfully. I actually connected with him at his request a little earlier as we were preparing, you might say, for the show earlier in the day. And the thing that I find different about his energy, firstly, I experience his energy quite centrally. And indeed, a lot of heart energy, but also I experience quite powerful energies in my head. I suspect this man was very intelligent, very considered, a planner. There is, as I said, this energy that I've not experienced from someone before when doing this kind of work. It's most interesting, this blend of what I would consider vertical energy, both heart and head in this manner. The energy in my head is not just what I would call intellectual energy. It's very much a Kundalini type energy that I'm feeling here. And I suspect this man was quite complex, quite a lot going on. So it'll be quite interesting, I think, to see what he has to say. Most unusual energy, very powerful.
Indeed. Looking forward to it.
So let's see what he has to say to us, if anything. Hopefully he has something to share with us.
I'm sure he does.
My dear friends, it is an honor to be able to come forth in this manner. It is not something that I ever considered that I would be doing, I have to say. And I became aware of Carolyn's interest in the movie of my life, which was made in 1970, or in particular, my Second World War career rather than my life in general, though other aspects of my life do bubble up in that movie. And I am drawn to tell you that that movie is quite an accurate depiction of me in terms of how I express myself, how I operated in the world. You would not describe me as subtle. I was very direct. People understood where I stood. Sometimes that lack of subtlety was not in my best interest, and at times not in the interest of some other people around me. But I understood warfare. I understood how to plan for battle and to execute that plan like few others. And I came forth quite specifically to participate in such roles. I chose to be born into a military family, as those of you that have examined my history at some point will understand. And so it was in my familial background, but indeed it was also in my, what you might consider, spiritual background. My monad had sent forth fingers of consciousness to planet Earth at quite a number of times in the past, where there was a requirement for military leadership. You might consider that this is not a valuable aspect of behavior to focus upon. It might seem a strange thing for a monad to do, to make something of a specialization of military leadership. But it is important to understand that in many ways, the nature of the military role in the human experience is quite unique. I'm not saying that warfare is a good thing as a general characteristic. I would not say that. But to be able to experience this unique role in the human environment was something that my monad was most interested in doing. It is not, as I say, to say that it was negative in that sense. If you consider my role, I was not about being negative in any manner. I was about executing that military leadership role to the best of my ability and to serve my country to the best of my ability. And if you consider the context of World War II in particular, though I did participate in World War I and other theaters of war in that lifetime, you will recognize that in the context of life as it was being lived, it was important that there be military leaders who, you might say, fulfilled the role as they were required, so that those such as Hitler were defeated. This was important in terms of how human life unfolded on planet Earth at that period in time. And so I am not one that has gone looking to create wars, you might say. That is not at all how I operated. And indeed, in none of those lifetimes have I done this. And you do see individuals today upon your planet who are what I would consider warmongers, those who seek to initiate and have wars be undertaken for many reasons. And indeed, such figures were active during my time on the planet. I was not one of those. I was not one to seek to have people be at war, but rather to execute the process of military leadership when it was required. Leadership is such an important role in general, and for the most part, true leadership is seldom expressed in ways that amount to very much outside of the context of war. And so the true focus of my monad was on expression of leadership and experience of leadership within that context. And so I came forth to, you might say, participate in that spectrum of experience that had become something of a specialty of my monad as far as its activity upon Earth was concerned. And I'm pleased to say, in a way, that my monad developed a great deal of understanding of this role. And you could say that my execution of my role as a military commander was very effective if you consider what was achieved with not only the Third Army, but other aspects of the American military that I led. But the one which stands out is the rapidity with which the Third Army was able to move through Europe, and you might say, for all intents and purposes, be responsible for a great degree of removal of the final German forces. And the processes that were used were quite different from any other armed group that was active at the time. And the processes that were used allowed us to move extremely quickly, as history would show, and with great effectiveness in terms of German people, German military captured and killed. And so we were able to accelerate that, you might say, defeat of Hitler to a great extent as a result of the processes that we used. I recognize that there were elements of my character, as I said, that did not serve some people particularly well. I did not truly understand when to keep quiet. I was not a political animal, as history has shown. I was a very effective military leader and had no interest whatsoever in the political processes. And in a sense, it led to my downfall on several levels. So this role, you might say, was played out in many lifetimes by my monad. And this was something that I actually had a connection with. I had no doubt about the existence of reincarnation. Indeed, I was able to quite readily recall a number of my past lives. And I spoke openly about these, much to the surprise and, you might say, suspicion of some of those with whom I was involved. But it was true. All of the lifetimes that I felt I was connected with, I was indeed connected with, and was able to reconfirm, you might say, as I crossed over beyond that lifetime. So it was a specialty, you might say, of my monad to gather that experience, to record it in the Akashic records in this powerful way within the human experience. There are, you might consider, military roles elsewhere in creation. There are armed forces, you might consider, within other aspects of creation. But the role within the human experience is quite unique. Firstly, as you have heard from others, the human being carries an emotional body that is not carried elsewhere in creation. And so the way the human being reacts to that wartime experience and the impact that a true leader can have on marshalling the troops, you might say, and to provide true leadership to them in a manner which has them reach beyond themselves to do things that they would not otherwise consider doing without the kind of leadership that I demonstrated. And so, as I say, I was able to, on behalf of my monad and along with the other fingers of consciousness that have come to participate in this manner, be able to record a unique imprint, you might say, a unique set of records that recorded this experience. And it is an experience that I anticipate will disappear from not only the human experience, but indeed from creation in general. And my monad understood this. And so it is why it undertook this particular focus in the human experience. And this is, in essence, the key message I want to share with you, to give you this understanding of, in a sense, who I was and why I fulfilled the role in the way that I fulfilled it. Are you there, Carolyn? Yes, Carolyn. I think you're disconnected. Could you reconnect yourself? Carolyn, I think you just need to touch the button. I'll come and see what's happening.
Because I've been dropped from the call.
There you go. You're back now.
Yes.
Well, it's a good time to be back.
Indeed.
So you couldn't hear what I was saying?
Didn't hear any of it.
Oh, okay.
I was dropped from the call.
Okay. Well,
but that's okay. We'll catch up.
Essentially, Patton was talking about why he came forth as other fingers of consciousness had done from his monad to experience that role of military leadership, to enter it in the Akashic records, because the human experience is unique in that regard.
That's wonderful.
So, did you have some questions for him?
Yes. I want him to discuss a little bit about the sphere of destiny and the disagreement between he and Eisenhower.
Yes, this is not well understood by most people. Some of you will know what the spear of destiny is. It is the spear that was used by the soldier at Yeshua's crucifixion to pierce his side and to cause him to supposedly bleed to death, which in fact he did not do. But nevertheless, that was the understanding of most people. And so that relic, you might say, has traveled through the time since then in the hands of quite a number of individuals, quite a number of military leaders, in fact, not just military, but also political leaders or royal leaders, perhaps you might consider. But for the most part, indeed, it has been in the hands of military figures, if you study the history. And indeed, the relic, as it is understood to be, is indeed that very same spear. And it came into the hands of the Americans during the Second World War. And because it had been what you might consider a military relic and held by great military leaders over long periods of time, I was quite keen that that tradition be continued, and indeed that the spear of destiny should firstly, initially remain in my hands, but then in fact transfer to the hands of America, who was, you might say, taking that role of leading the world from that point forward. And Eisenhower did not agree with this stance. He took the view that it should be returned to the museum from which it had come. And we disagreed quite strongly about this, and I was quite vocal because I understood the history of this spear better than most people. Indeed, if you have watched the movie Patton, you will see a great deal of understanding that I expressed of the context of the military campaigns that I was undertaking and how they fitted into the historical perspective, because I understood these things in part from my reading of history, but also, as I mentioned, my recall from past lives. And so all of this understanding was in place within me. I had this context for all that I was doing, which in many ways I now realize was quite unique And so it was this understanding, this perspective, that drove me to see that Spear of Destiny pass initially to me and hence to America. And as I said, Eisenhower disagreed with this because he did not understand this, and he had become more of a politician and an appeaser than the true American military leader that I expected him to be. And so we disagreed quite strongly about this. And I'm very aware that you had have brought forth a couple of examples of the Monuments Men, and I very much agree with the work that they undertook to return the artworks to their rightful owners within Europe. This I very much agree with. But the Spear of Destiny is a very different item. It is a military relic, as I have described, and as I say, has been in the hands of many great military leaders throughout history since its time of Yeshua. And so we disagreed quite strongly about this, and it perhaps was the straw that broke the camel's back, you might say, in terms of my relationship with Eisenhower. And some of you will know that I died as a result of a car accident. And I would say to you that that car accident was indeed no accident. America had already begun the process of executing those individuals that no longer served the American purpose as they saw it, even if they were, you might say, not ever serving that purpose, but rather were considered a serious thorn in the side of the American machine. And so you might consider I was disposed of as being an inconvenience, a thorn in the side of the now very political, very, you might say, looking good processes that had emerged, all the while hiding underhanded and very damaging military and destructive processes. There's been a great deal of killing and maiming done supposedly in times of peace throughout Europe and indeed throughout the world. And I do not agree with this kind of process. I believe that when you go to war, you should do it openly and be clear about your agenda, as I always was, whereas there have been so many underhanded processes in the world since the Second World War in particular. And these, I was aware, were beginning to be implemented, and I did not agree with these either. So there were a number of issues that made me, you might say, unpopular with the powers that be in Washington, and so I was disposed of.
Do we know where the Spear of Destiny is presently?
It is my understanding that it is currently in a museum in Europe, but it is not on public display. It is held, you might say, in reserve because it is considered to be something of a talisman, a lightning rod that might trigger particular individuals who recall its power. And so it has been, you might say, secreted away and not in public display.
Did that, in your opinion, did the Spear of Destiny have the power that it was believed to have had?
There have been many stories about the power of the Spear of Destiny, and indeed, as you may know, Hitler had sought it, as he sought so many esoteric relics. Few truly understand how focused Hitler was on astrology, on the esoteric on so many levels. And so he saw the Spear of Destiny as being an important relic in terms of giving him some additional power and authority if he held it in his possession. And there have been many leaders who have believed this of the Spear of Destiny, and some have written extensively about the power that this relic supposedly carries. It is my view that there is not a special power that is carried by this spear, but rather because of the history and because of human expectations and hence the patterning in human consciousness, there is this expectation that flows as a result of the possession. I am not of the view that in truth it carries any specific power, as I say, but rather has this impact upon the individual who holds it, who believes they are capable of more, and therefore they are capable of more. For me, I was not interested in it from that perspective. As those who have examined my life will understand, I did not seek for a talisman, you might say, to activate my authority. I simply grasped it with both hands and, you might say, chose my parents, the family into which I was born, to reinforce that predisposition that came from my monad. And so these threads were more than adequate, you might say, without requiring some, you might consider, lightning rod within the human experience. So I do not consider that the Spear of Destiny in truth carries some unique power.
Thank you. I would like to ask my listeners to call in with their questions now. The hour passes by ever so quickly. And if you want to speak to this incredibly wonderful general, now is your chance. So I ask you, Patton, are you content with the manner in which the film Patton portrays you?
As I mentioned earlier, I consider that movie to be quite an accurate portrayal of me and how I operated. Of course, there is always some degree of poetic license in the making of a movie, but those who created that movie did a lot of homework. They understood my character and they understood the roles that I played and fulfilled during my military service during World War II. And so I consider it to be quite accurate, indeed far more accurate than most such portrayals are. And so I am quite pleased with the accuracy and the, in my view, wonderful acting role that George C. Scott fulfilled within that movie. I do feel it was quite an accurate portrayal of my style. You would not describe me as being subtle, but I was a truly great leader, a man who was a very good strategist and tactician and a leader of men. I trained my men very thoroughly. I was able to motivate men in Africa that had, you might say, lost their way, and I was able to turn them into a very effective fighting force quite quickly because I came and displayed true leadership in their presence. And there is a real role for being a true leader of men in that military situation, as I explained earlier. And so those portrayals are important. There is no question I was quite a unique character in the modern idiom.
Thank you. There's a lot of trouble spots in the world presently with nations warring against one another. Do you know if your monad has sent other figures of consciousness into the world presently.
There indeed is another finger of consciousness that is present in the world, and indeed it is continuing the pattern, dare I say it, that has been followed by my monad in terms of sending forth fingers of consciousness to provide what I would consider true military leadership. And so there is indeed a finger of consciousness present in your world, and it is involved in military activity. But it is not involved in those underhanded ways that I express distaste for. It is not a role that I in any manner would wish to be associated with.
Thank you. There seems to be a desire among some military leadership to play this role of pitting one country against another. Do you see this changing anytime soon?
Firstly, it is important to understand how deeply distorted, how deeply misled the highest levels of the military system have become in America and elsewhere. It is important to understand the role of what you would consider the bankers in controlling the world and the way they work through very dark practices. And indeed, they are subject to those same dark practices that are imposed indeed upon them as leaders of, you might say, this darkness in the world, and how they have used these practices to control the military machine. And so you have, for example, homosexuality that is quite rampant and used as a tool of control and manipulation. And it is not just homosexuality, it is also the abuse of children, indeed including the sacrifice of children at the darkest levels. And these practices are indeed very, very dark indeed, and it is little wonder that the American military machine has become so distorted and so focused upon complete control of the world, because they are simply fulfilling the purposes, the roles of those forces that indeed are dictating the core agenda for humanity at this time. It is a very sad spectrum, and in my view. And it is also my view and my perspective that all of this will come to a very rapid end quite soon. It is a time, as you too understand it, and indeed many of your listeners understand it, where change will come forth in the world, where the average human being that has a desire for a better life, a desire to understand the truth of who and what they are, and to live in peace and fellowship with their fellow man, the opportunity will emerge for them to move on, you might say, from this dark and difficult consciousness. And those who are driving these agendas will find their power emasculated. And even those who will remain in this consciousness will not be able to exercise the kind of abuses of their fellow man that has been such a part of this world.
That is good to hear. Let us hope and pray that this change comes about quickly. The world needs peace at the moment. Do you see a worldwide peace coming about?
I am not sure that there will be a worldwide peace in the way that you describe it, because there will continue to be those who wish to control others, and even though their ability to do so will be emasculated, those agendas will remain amongst those until their lives are ended. And so I do not expect there will be a worldwide peace emerge. I do not think that is a likely outcome, but rather a separation of those who wish to live as I described, to live in peace with their fellow man, to respect their fellow man, and to respect and acknowledge the dignity of what it means to be a human being, regardless of what social path they follow, a respect for the wonderful indigenous cultures of this planet. There have been so many experiments of life upon the planet that have been so successful, so powerful, so valuable, that are very different from the what you might consider Western European model that has been imposed upon the world. There truly does not need to be technology in its modern form for life to be lived successfully in the world. Indeed, in many ways, life without technology can be lived far more successfully. Connection with nature, communing with nature, whether it be plants or animals or insects or birds or just the totality of nature itself. There have been so many races, so many cultures on the planet that have, in their own ways, in their own unique ways, had these relationships in place, and these have in large measure been destroyed by this, what I call, Western cultural model, which indeed has been the key platform for these, what I call, dark forces in the world.
Thank you. From your point of view, do you see changes coming in what could be considered the religions of the world?
It is my view that you will see religion in general discredited. For certain, there are some what you consider religions that indeed have very powerful spiritual aspects to them, and Buddhism is one example of this. But also there are aspects of Buddhism which need to be corrected, you might say, or eliminated, and the true spiritual nature simply be expressed for the truth of what it is. But those other religions that carry very little of these threads anymore, even though they have within their spectrum beautiful spiritual traditions, these religions will, you might say, depart the scene. You already see actions to expose the dark forces behind, for example, the Catholic Church. And as a result of that, most of the Christian streams, which in one way or another are derived from Catholicism, they are, you might say, reforming versions or reactionary versions in one manner or another. And so most of them carry this distortion of the truth of who and what Yeshua and Mary Magdalene were and what they were here for. So religion, for the most part, is about power and control. And when people begin to understand this, then they will participate in the demise of what remains of, for example, the Catholic Church and all that it represents in the world. But not just the Catholic Church. There are the same forces at work in pretty much every religion, as I say. There are no true exceptions to this.
Thank you so much. My friends, we're getting very close to the end of the hour. Our time goes by so quickly. If you have a question that you wish to ask of General Patton, please call in now with your questions. Do you see a change in consciousness in the world?
although I haven't used those words exactly, I see this separation that I spoke of between those who wish to live at peace with one another and honoring their fellow man and indeed their fellow species upon the planet, that those will separate out into a different consciousness, a higher consciousness, something that you and many of your listeners are well aware of. I see this emerging, and indeed that new consciousness exists and indeed has actually existed since before the fall in Atlantis, where some beings who were in Atlantis, who were of high vibration, moved to that new consciousness at that time. So when there is talk of a new earth, indeed that new earth has actually been in existence for a long time. And indeed there are other levels of consciousness for earth also, but primarily there is this expression which is in what you call the angelic dimension, some people call the fifth dimension. And it is this consciousness to which those of humanity who, as I say, wish to live in harmony with their fellow man and to understand the truth of who and what they are, it is that consciousness that all of these will move to and join what I would consider to be a pristine form of the earth rather than this very seriously compromised state of what you call the third dimensional version of earth.
Yeah.
So I see this separation coming forth, and indeed from where I sit, it is very close to emerging in your experience, the processes that will unfold this and lead humanity forward into these changes.
Well, my friends, we're coming to the end of our hour, and I would like to thank you, General Patton, for being with us, for giving us your insight on things, to answering these questions so completely. And while we're at this point, Richard, do you have any questions of General Patton?
I'm interested to hear what he has to say about how he perceived his role, how he executed his role, whether he feels that he should have been treated differently in the world as it existed at the end of the war, or whether how he was treated, you might say, was an inevitable result of the posture, you might say, he took in the world.
That's a good question.
I have to say that I always viewed my role within the context of history, because I did have, as I said, a good understanding of history, both from my own studies, but also because of the past life recall that I had, which indeed was very strong. I'm aware that there are some today who carry quite strong past life recall, and it was something that I came into this life with. I was aware of many past lives from quite a young age. And so I had this context, if you will, that was a historical context that in so many ways was more important to me than, you might say, being a politically correct individual within the context of the world as it was unfolding. My focus was on being the best military leader, the best general I could be. And I feel I did that. I feel that my men respected me. Indeed, I would say many of them loved me, because they understood that I was willing to be there with them. I was not some general who sat back behind the scenes, but rather led from the front. I was involved. Even in the First World War, I was involved at the front line so that I could see what was unfolding and make the decisions in real time that needed to be made. It was what made me so effective. And so my focus was on being the best military general that I could be within the context in which I found myself. And if you reflect upon this, it is not that surprising that with that focus, I, you might say, fell out with those who were more interested in the political processes than I was. They simply were unimportant to me. They were not part of my character, my focus. I was much more interested in the context of history within which I was acting. And so I recognize that in the context of the world, some would consider that I was something of a failure at the end of the war, but I do not consider that. My focus was fulfilling the role that I fulfilled. And once the war ended, I was like a round peg in a square hole, you might say. I just did not fit in that changed world. And so I consider I was very effective in the terms that I focused upon for my life. And indeed, the way it ended is perhaps no great surprise. I could have been more sensitive in the way that I spoke, in the words that I used, in the way that I interacted with the press. But that was me. That's how I was. And I spoke as I was, just as I spoke to the press as I led my men. And I make, in the end, no apologies for that. I accept the consequences. But I also am proud of how I was able to lead my armies in the times of war and to deliver the outcomes that were expected of me and indeed exceed the expectations of those with whom I interacted. History has shown that the German High Command held my abilities in quite high regard, and I believe those views were well-founded because of what I demonstrated when I was active leading the armies that I led.
Yes, you did a beautiful job, and as you know, we're very proud of you. The movie doesn't show too much of your saving of the Lipizzan horses, and I think if Germany would have gotten there first, so to speak, they would have taken them back to Germany. Do you care to comment on that?
Yes, I had a great fondness, as you understand it, for history. Indeed, the film does a good job of sharing the context within which I viewed all of my battles, all of my activities. In fact, there is a brief segment which talks about the various forces that had conquered Palermo over the centuries. And so I understood the role of the horse in history, particularly military history. I was a good horseman myself, and I loved the Lipizzana horse because of their role over time. They were a beautiful military horse at one point, and so I was very keen to see them protected. And I did not trust the actions of Hitler in their regard, and so I, you might say, went out of my way to protect those beautiful horses, those beautiful relics of the past, you might say. They, in their own way, were the same kind of relics of the past as I was, because I represented the past as in terms of a military leader, and they represented a great breed for military purposes in the past, and so I wanted to make sure that they were protected.
General Patton, thank you so much for your answers. You gave us full and complete answers, and we really do appreciate that. And you know we love you.
It is my honor to have been able to serve in the way that I served. And I saw my role as service, and even though some people saw me as being excessively proud, in truth, I saw my role as being in service to the men that I led, and I believe I was in service to them, and so I am at peace with my role, albeit it was a role that was involved in the process of war, as I said, and that is not an ideal spectrum, but it is a spectrum that will pass, and it was a very necessary spectrum in human history, a role that needed to be fulfilled, and I'm very proud of the way that I fulfilled it. And I thank you for the opportunity to come forth and to speak with your audience in this manner, to be able to share my reflections and my perspective on the unfolding of my own life and history as I see it.
Thank you so much. As I said, we love you. And I would like to thank you, Richard, for the beautiful job that you did bringing General Patton's information forward to us.
Thank you, Carolyn. And thank you, General Patton, for coming forth in this manner. It was a unique perspective, a unique understanding. And few have lived their lives, I think, with a sense of history in the way that you did. So it's very interesting perspective.
Richard, we have a few minutes. Would you like to talk about the information that we did with the Templars?
Yes, I'd be happy to mention that material. It really is quite extraordinary material in my view. Some of you will be aware that one of the Templars came forth and, you might say, tapped Carolyn on the shoulder in 2010 and said they had some messages that they wanted to give us. And we really didn't know how it would unfold or where it would go, but we took a string of messages in 2010 and then some more in 2011, which unfolded into quite an extraordinary story of who the Templars were, why they were there, and you might say the purposes that they fulfilled, including the construction of the Gothic cathedrals for purposes that are very different from what they are perceived today as great bastions of the Catholic Church. They were not that at all. And so it really is quite extraordinary material. And for me, perhaps the greatest aspect of those recordings, because we had our dear friend and colleague Adam in Greece turned them into videos for us. And to me, the exciting aspect of them is the response that many of the people that have viewed them have had, the connection they feel with that time and the work that the Templars did. Quite a number of those who received them were Templars themselves or were involved with that time. And so it has awoken memories for many of the people that have watched them and listened to them. They've been quite powerful triggers, and also in some cases they have acted as a tool to help individuals to, you might say, open up connections within, to begin to experience their power, their energies, their true spiritual nature that in some cases they've struggled to open the door to in the past. And that's very exciting. That's very humbling to witness, to experience. So in their own way, they've been a kind of a meditative tool for some people that have received them. So, you know, I'm very excited by them, I must say.
Yes, it is beautiful work. And it helps people understand how to use the energies and gifts of the Gothic cathedrals. And that in itself is amazing.
Indeed. So we should probably wrap it up, I think, Carolyn.
I think so.
We're up to the edge, and
we're at the edge.
I do apologize to those of you who didn't receive my email announcing that Patton was joining us today. We do have a few problems with our supplier that sends out those emails. They've implemented a new system, and like some new systems, this one's fallen pretty badly on the floor. So I'm aware that they are not getting out as they normally would, and hopefully that will be resolved in the next day or two so things return to normal.
Good night, all. Thank you, Richard, for your service. And I would like to thank those at DBS Radio for supporting us and taking care of us.
And thank you, Carolyn, for making all of this possible.
We all work together now, don't we?
Indeed. Good night for now.
Good night for now.